The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
The Crossman Conversation is hosted by John Crossman. John's heart is to see our community of leaders unite around what we have in common. John will be joined by political leaders, religious leaders, as well as activists making a difference in our nation. Here is your host for the Crossman Conversation, John Crossman.
Hello, this is John Crossman, and welcome to the Crossman Conversation. Mike, before we get started, I got to tell you a quick story.
All right.
Just a quick story.
I love your quick stories.
Well, I got to tell you, I think you know this about me. Some people, I take this as a huge compliment, would refer to me as a patriot, in that I really love this country. And I love this country's heroes, right? Like people mm-hmm. that embody what a country is about. Like, I've got a friend in Orlando named Helen Greenspun, and she's a Holocaust survivor. Just an amazing person. And he's since passed away, but Bill Coleman, was a guy that parachuted to France on Normandy on D-Day. Mm-hmm. And then he did it again on the 50th anniversary. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Like, great guy. And so I love meeting people who embody America and the American spirit and what we're about. And I always enjoy having this human contact with them because it's people I kind of study historically. And then when I have the moment to kind of interact with them, it's just so fulfilling to me. And today we have a guest that embodies all that.
Got a hero on the line.
We got a hero on the line. Today we have with us is Mr. Marvin Alasky. And are you there, sir? You there?
I am. Hey, John.
Well, thank you so much for being on this show. I have done so much research and following you over the years and all the important work you've done. And what I was talking to Mike about earlier is the weight of the impact you've had on our nation. And then also dealing with people who support it, people don't support it, but the impact and the things you've done is so amazing. So thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate those kind words, even though I did not parachute into Normandy nor even into Austin, Texas.
Well, you have parachuted on some tough topics, and I'm grateful for that. So today you're on the show and you're talking about what you're working on now is Reforming Journalism Project. And I'd love for you to talk about that. I don't know if you want to talk about just a little bit about your background first, or if you just want to jump into it. Either way, but that's the main topic I want to hear about today.
Well, sure. As far as background, the relevant part is I came out of college and was a local news reporter, first in Oregon and then in Boston, Massachusetts. I became a journalism professor at the University of Texas, and partway through that, way back in 1992, I started editing World Magazine and did that for 29 years. Recently left that and particularly involved now in, as you mentioned, the Reforming Journalism Project. And the key here is that in the United States, journalism almost always was local. You had local newspapers, and those were the ways people got news. They got international and national news through them, but of course, a lot of local news, and people were often very active in their communities based on what they read in the newspapers. And this was different, by the way, from Europe, which tended to have national ideological newspapers. So in France, for example, the newspapers came out of Paris, and there were some on the right, some on the left, same sort of thing in other European countries. But America, the ideal was always local journalism and local political and social activity. The problem is in the past 15 years, especially with the ascension of the internet, a lot of those local newspapers have either gone out of business or really severely cut their staffs because they used to depend for most of their money on advertising, and people are now advertising in Google and Facebook and so forth, and a lot of these papers just aren't making it economically, and that leaves an enormous hole, not only for people to read about stuff, but also to become active in the community. So a lot of people now, and people, almost 100% of people in the United States know the name of the President of the United States, but only a minority of those people know the name of their mayor. And that's trouble for the type of democracy we have with a lot of local activity. So Reforming Journalism Project is designed to help people learn to create local websites with local news. There are a couple of these I know of. There need to be a lot more all over the country. And so we have the first part of this Reforming Journalism Project from August 8th through August 12th, which is a Monday through Friday. We're having a training session, a very intensive week-long, 5-day-long training session at Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. And if any of the listeners are interested in really becoming active in their neighborhoods and being a blessing to their whole community, they can go to the Reforming Journalism Project website. It's just reformingjournalism.com, and they can apply for this session. They'll be learning from veteran journalists about how to tell stories that can inform and attract local audiences. Our application deadline's coming up real soon, so I hope people will go to www.reformingjournalism.com and apply. And I'll be there. And my wife will be there. We'll have other journalists who are there. And we're going to try to keep the class small, maybe 10 or 12 people, so we can have a lot of personal attention. And out of that, I hope will come some new local websites on local news.
That is really fascinating. And a couple different thoughts I have about that. One is, on my show, we'll have different politicians on, and we've had both Republican, Democrat. But when we have them on, we don't focus on policy. I really try to ask them about themselves, mm-hmm. just them, the human being, right? And Mike and I had a really cool show that came out a couple weeks ago. We had the attorney general from West Virginia and a state senator from New Jersey. I mean, one Republican, one Democrat, one black, one white. But all the interview was asking about themselves. And they sounded identical. I mean, they sounded so similar. But one of the biggest commonalities of both of them, and we've seen this consistently, we've interviewed U.S. senators and we've interviewed, you know, local commissioners, things like that, is they always talk about their key advice is get local. They said exactly, I mean, word for word, what you just said and what you're doing is what every politician we've had on the show has said verbatim is how important that is. So isn't that fascinating that both left and right are saying the same thing that you're saying and reinforcing that? So it's very important.
Well, and this is actually not only a key thing in politics, but a key thing in journalists. We train students, and we'll train them in August to come down the ladder of abstraction, is what we call it. You know, the tendency sometimes is, you know, politicians and journalists to wax eloquent about big national and international things. But no, the goal is to come down the ladder to get specific with human stories, human lives, why people decide what they do, who's doing what. I think that is good that the politicians are saying this, and people with experience in journalism are saying it too.
So I want to respond to, like, one of the things I think about when I hear you say this is the subject that comes up my mind is mental health. And I think about people who come home from work or they're retired and they just turn on Fox News or MSNBC, and all they do is watch news for 12 hours, national news, and all the topics come up are scary and they can't do anything about them, right? So that's one person. Now, if someone else then focuses on local news, and let's say the story is about the need for volunteers at the local high school, and they listen to that news or they read that news and they think, oh, wait a minute, I'll go volunteer, right? That's a huge dynamic shift. Like, when they're focused on local news, they actually can join the story and be part of the solution. Is that right?
Oh, that's exactly right. And one of the things that this course we're having from August 8th through 12th, we'll probably have a couple of recent college graduates, but we'll also, I hope, have some retired people because it's a perfect type of activity for people who don't want to just sit there and watch the news and become depressed and worried, but actually do something about it, and in the course of doing it, meet their neighbors, be a blessing to the whole community. So it's perfect for a retiree with lots of energy. My mother-in-law will soon turn 98, and so, you know, she's still living in her own house, the house she's lived in since the 1950s, and able to get around pretty well. But she's not ready at age 98 to start a local news site or anything like that. But if she were 78. I think she could do it if she were 68. It's perfect for a retiree. I know one fellow, and he's in his 30s, but he runs a local website in California in his community. And his kids, he has five kids. They're just getting into double digits, so 10, 12, 13 years old. But his homeschooling plan, because he's homeschooling the kids, his homeschooling plan is to have them be his reporters.
Oh my gosh!
His ad salesman and everything. So
that's awesome.
That's a pretty good business plan.
I like that. I like that.
But retirees or other people can, you know, get the whole family involved.
Well, I have to mention this because my mom listens to every one of these shows and gives me great critiques and feedback, by the way. So thank you, Mom. She's 83 and she just had her first novel published this year.
Wow.
So that's fun. So been a writer her whole life and got that done. So I think you're right that there's lots of ways to have that energy. Tell me real quick, because we're going to take a break in a second, but August 8th to the 12th, the core demographic, the person that hears this thinks, boom, I got to go to Union University, Jackson, and I got to do this. Who is that person? What is their profile that needs to be the bullseye person for this?
The most likely profile, I mean, from the people who have applied so far is someone who's in 50s, 60s, retired, and wanting to be still active. But, you know, we have a couple of really promising students just graduating from college, and I think this will be an interesting class because the courses I enjoyed teaching most during all my years at the University of Texas was, mostly people of college student age, but there were always several older people, retirees, who would come and sit in and not have to pay tuition for it and learn something. So they added a lot to the class. So I think a class like this that will involve a lot of discussion will be have a mix of ages and backgrounds. And I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you know, it's as we get older, it's our bodies and our minds are a lose it or use it kind of a thing, right? So,
yep.
And getting active and pushing and stuff. So that's great. That's great. So, Mr. Lasky, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and want to hear more about you and what you're doing. So exciting. So great to have you here on the Crossman Conversation.
It's said that it's not how much money you make, it's how much you keep and use to plan for your future. Nathan Meeks, principal at Meeks Capital, combines leading investment techniques with modern financial planning software to be the resource you turn to for clear, objective, and sound financial advice. For a no-obligation consultation, call Nathan at 407-494-5439 or visit meekscapital.com.
Are you willing to serve communities in crisis around the world? To people who are impoverished, oppressed, and persecuted? Frontier Partners International offers mission opportunities in areas least served to meet the needs of the helpless, the hapless, and hopeless. To learn how you can be a partner of this frontline ministry with your time, talent, or treasure, visit frontier-partners.org. That's frontier-partners.org.
Here's a call to those who want to make an impact on their company, their community, or who possess a desire to make the world a better place. Crossman Career Builders provides the tools and resources for you or your company to make a difference on some of the toughest issues that we all face. Crossman Career Builders partners with CEOs, politicians, and pastors seeking to address problems of racism, mental health, addiction, justice, and suicide. CrossmanCB.com.
The Crossman Conversation thanks Four River Smokehouse for helping to sponsor our program. From its inception, Four River Smokehouse has not only served delicious food in warm family settings, but they've been key leaders in creating positive social and financial impact in our Central Florida communities, such as their Four Rivers Farm, a healthy, thriving, sustainable food system. For a Four Rivers Smokehouse near you, visit 4rsmokehouse.com.
Once again, here is John Crossman.
And we're back. And Mr. Lasky, thanks so much for all you're doing. I wanted to clarify something with this thing you're doing with all this training. You know, once somebody gets there, did I hear right that it's free tuition, free room and board? Is that right?
Yep, there is a free lunch and a free dinner and a free breakfast and a free place to stay on the Union University campus.
That's awesome.
And free tuition. So people have to get there on their own dime. But once they're there, we have donors who care about this and they're picking up the tab.
That is really, really amazing. What a great resource and support for local communities. And we do a lot of work with HBCUs, and I appreciate your commitment to promoting diversity and making sure all stories get told from all places. So thank you for your concern about that as well.
Yeah.
In your mind, what makes a great journalist? What is it about them that makes them a great journalist?
Well, I'd say first, and this is general regardless of theology and ideology, curiosity. And an interest in adventure, and you know, and sometimes a certain bravery. I have grandchildren, two of whom are 4.5-year-old twins, and so in the afternoon when my wife and I are exhausted, they watch a television series called Tintin, which is from Belgium, or the original author was Belgium, and the star is a reporter, a boy who's also a reporter, and he goes around having adventures, goes to places. So, yeah, I think that's paramount. I mean, the interest and desire to introduce readers to places they're unlikely to have visited, people they're unlikely to have met, maybe ideas that they may not have thought about. Learning all the time, that I think is number one. And then for a Christian journalist, knowledge of the Bible and knowledge of where the Bible takes a definite position and where it doesn't. Where the Bible takes a definite position, we still want to interview all kinds of people on various sides, but the central character is probably likely to be a Christian or someone motivated by biblical understanding in some ways. That's important, as opposed to, let's say, other issues where the Bible is silent, then we're pretty much going to do a balancing of one side and the other side on it. So a biblical understanding to be able to discern where the Bible is spoken and where it hasn't. We don't want to overuse the Bible or underuse the Bible.
If somebody is an expert on a subject matter and they're helpful, but they're not a Christian, that's still truth, and that can be helpful,
yep.
Right? And on the other hand, sometimes somebody can be off, but maybe they're coming from a place of deep wounding. There's a lot of balance to it. That's right, what I hear coming out.
Yeah, I don't talk theology with my dentist, especially when he has weapons of destruction in my mouth at that point.
Well, listen, I always tell people, I think sometimes in churches, we put too much pressure on pastors. We go to pastors for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. My example of that was when we start talking about mental health. You know, when if you're having a really struggle with depression or anxiety, we have other people in society that can help you with resources. I actually have a family member that sees a psychiatrist who I'm friends with, and he's Jewish. And get this, he went to the University of Florida, Mike. Oh my gosh, you know,
go Gators.
Oh my Lord, see, the debate continues, right? But
yeah.
he is one of the greatest doctors I've ever met. He's fantastic. But one of the things is that with his patient, who's my family member, he's always encouraging them to be involved in their church. It helps their anxiety and depression to be involved in their church, even though that's not something he's a part of. There's ways that all that can come together in healthy ways. Is that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. Now, I grew up in a Jewish home. I became a Christian purely through God's grace when I was 26. And occasionally I meet and talk with Jewish folks who are hostile because, hey, I've left the Jewish faith. But I also am friends with some Orthodox rabbis, and yeah, they are allies. And and we respect each other. On pro-life matters, on so many other things, we are allies, and we will let God sort it out.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you have any in all your years of doing this? Have there any journalists that you've met today that you go, man, John, that's the young leader, that's the older guy, or whoever that blows you away? You think they're doing a great job that impresses you?
Well, thinking of Jewish guys, there's a fellow named Nat Hentoff, died a few years ago, who was one of the founders of the Village Voice back in the 1950s, which is a leftist or was a leftist weekly newspaper in New York City. And so he was on the political and social left in every way until at a certain point back around maybe late 1980s or so, he started reading and caring about abortion and realized, hey, these are human beings. And what are we doing killing them? And so he became a strong pro-life person, wrote about it, spoke about it. And when I went to interview him one day, this is back in probably 1991, I went to interview him at the Village Voice in Greenwich Village, New York City. And it was interesting, even though he was with politically the other people in the magazine in every way, except on abortion, I saw people shunning him. I mean, they wouldn't talk with him. I mean, he still had an office there. He still was writing music reviews and so forth for them. But yeah, they just basically excommunicated him because he deviated on that one position, and he stuck with it. He stuck with it for 25 years or so until he died, and had to absorb a certain amount of abuse in his daily work because of that. So yeah, I respect him a lot for his integrity and. You know, to be a journalist also, and I guess it's the same thing about a good politician, except more so. I mean, a virtuous politician does not have his finger up always testing the wind. There are certain things he stands for, hopefully biblical things, and he's going to persist. He's going to persevere even when there's prejudice and antagonism towards him. And it's even more so for a journalist. You know, we should not be operating just by public opinion polls. The goal when you put out a publication, at least certainly with World for all those years, was not to just tell our readers what they already knew and so forth. We wanted to challenge them in certain ways and introduce them to other ways of thinking, other people, and so forth. So, you know, that's something I think that's really important in journalism, to be willing to be adventurous, to challenge people, and sometimes there are consequences in terms of lost advertising or lost donations and sometimes lost jobs, but that goes with the territory.
It is so fascinating that sometimes people who are constantly promoting inclusiveness are actually pretty exclusive, right?
Right.
And when I think about Southeastern University in Lakeland, it's Christian University, in the center of the campus, they have Jesus washing disciples' feet. And I look at that, I'm like, well, is it Judas? Is it Peter? You know, we don't know, but we do know that as Christians, we're called to care about people that have opposing
right.
views, right? We're not going to throw them out of our lives forever. We don't cancel
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I gave a lecture, actually, a guest lecture at Southeastern about 15 years ago.
Oh, really?
And and enjoyed it. But I don't know, at a lot of universities, the climate has grown so hostile in the last 15 years that... you know, sometimes speakers are just not allowed to speak, or people are booing all the time, and you know, you need a police guard going in. So, yeah, I hope Southeastern hasn't become that way, because
no.
It was certainly delightful 15 years ago.
They're delightful today. I can promise you that.
Okay.
So tell me this: all the interviews you've done in your whole career, is there anyone that jumps out? You're like, oh my gosh, that was my favorite interview. I interviewed so and so, and it was so great. Is there any of that jump out?
Yeah, I'd say the most delightful in lots of ways was a few years back with Johnny Erickson Tata.
Really?
I had never met her before that, and I was a little suspicious because she's well known, she's gotten a lot of publicity, she's grown a big organization. For people who know Johnny, about a little more than 50 years ago, took a dive into water and became paralyzed, quadriplegic, and so she's been ever since then living under those restraints. But she is after as she's told the story, a couple of years of real despair, she came to know Christ more deeply, and just I was impressed. She seemed very joyful. I mean, we talked before, I was expecting kind of, well, a celebrity, but no, she was very human. And you know, in the middle of our interview, sometimes, a couple of times she broke out in song. And from what I understand, this was sincere on her part. It wasn't showtime. So I enjoyed that. I think of some other people, there's, David French, who's become notorious in some circles because he thought through the situation with Donald Trump and came out against him. But he's a smart guy, and I enjoy talking with him. There are some fiction writers, Sarah House, Jinming Li. When I run through them, there are a lot of people. There's a fellow, Justin Gibney, from Atlanta, who has an organization called the AND campaign, because one of his goals is to try to bring people together and bridge the gaps, as opposed to just furthering more polarization.
That's
so
awesome.
I enjoy talking with him. But yeah, interviewing is fun to do. And I like meeting new people in those circumstances.
That's awesome. Well, we need to wrap up. I want to tell you that my favorite interview ever has been with Marvin Alasky. That's my favorite interview. Okay.
Wow.
And I do want to say this to you, just on a human level. I am a Christian conservative who's very passionate about helping people in need. And you've been that guy and advocated that for many, many years. And so I just want to, as a human to human, as a brother to brother, I just thank you for your pioneering that work. And thank you, because it's helping me to do what I feel called to do. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, let's keep in contact.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on the Crossman Conversation. And so once again, thank you for a great show. This has been John Crossman, the Crossman Conversation. And as always, support your local HBCU.
This has been Crossman Conversation, produced by a Crossman Career Builders Mark Radio Production.